And first on the agenda, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2176. And committee, we have an amendment in your packet there. Looking for a motion.
Which one are we looking at?
Well, I have in front of me the information.
Excuse me just a minute, Representative Greenlight. I'll have Janet explain to us what we did here with this amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, last Wednesday we heard the bill, House Bill 2176, that would create a new offense for failure to maintain a safe distance when passing an emergency vehicle or ambulance, and noted, or the officers noted for us, that it only applied when there are two lanes in each direction, or two or more lanes in each direction. And it was a committee's choice to consider an amendment, so Legislative Council drafted the Dash 1 amendments that you have at your place today, and it would include the offense of failing to reduce speed when passing a stopped emergency vehicle or ambulance on a two-lane highway, in other words, one lane in each direction. So it would expand the bill to two-lane roads. That's the extent of the amendment. And if you have any questions, we have representatives of the state police and the Police Officers Association in the audience.
Do I hear a motion? Representative Greenlight.
I move House Bill 2176 be amended with the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Greenlight moves that House Bill 2176 be amended with Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so adopted. Is there another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2176 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves House Bill 2176 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for the bill, but I understand that it's going to be the job now of ODOT to publicize, to let the people know that this bill is in effect, and I don't want us to lose the communications here. I think we need to somehow let the public know that we've got this law in effect, so that it'll help them, because I don't know any other way to let them know that we've got a law in effect. So
thank you.
I want to make sure they follow up on that. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Those in favor of the motion will signify by aye. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Sonner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative
Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carried. Need a carrier for the floor? Any volunteers?
I'd be honored to be here.
Thank you. Representative Greenlight will carry you. Who's here with the... Matt Garrett, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt, for
thank you, Mr.
being
Chairman.
Here this morning. And you're it this morning, so you can
I'm it.
Use the time.
And I have the I appreciate that, and I have my faithful helper to control the technology so it doesn't control me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matthew Garrett. I'm the Chief of Staff at the Oregon Department of Transportation, and it's my privilege to continue to provide information on the status of the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, known as OTIA. I want to touch on about six things here, an overview on the expenditures, how we're spending the bond monies, give a little history, too, to bring everybody up to speed. show you some of the projects that we have completed. We have some done, ribbons cut, people using the facilities. Look to the future. Look at the timelines for delivery as we look out over the life of the bill. When do these projects come online? I want to touch briefly on the success of OTIA. It is touching this department as well as our partners in many different ways, and I'll share what I think are at least three areas that are collateral benefits of this investment act. Quickly look at some projects, upcoming events, so to speak, those projects that are coming online and to be completed very soon, and then end with a web page that we completed, which will give anyone and everyone who wants to check on the status of the projects the opportunity. It's a comprehensive website. So with that, let's turn to a little brief history. The Oregon Transportation Investment Act, or OTIA, is actually two bills, House Bill 2142, which provided fee increases, specifically a title fee that garnered the revenue that we could bond that eventually yielded $400 million. During the first special session, House Bill 4010 increased the bonding authority from $400 to $500 million. So that's where we arrive at with OTIA authorized at $500 million to pay for highway projects, bridges, modernization or capacity type projects, as well as pavement preservation dollars. To date, we have 172 projects. 64 are those interchange or capacity type projects. 20 are state bridges. 44 are bridges on the city and county facilities. And then we have 44 pavement preservations, those type of on district level highways, as the bill indicated. They're also a benefit of that investment. We went in, invested in some downtown main streets where we actually gave facelifts to downtowns using the district level highway that was their main street. Prettified that. A lot of enhancements takes place in some of these communities. So I reference Joseph. If you've had the opportunity to get out to Eastern Oregon, go to the city of Joseph, you've seen what can happen when you do a pavement preservation job and enhance it with additional monies to build the community that is now Joseph. So with that, gives you an overview of what the $500 million, when the commission approved those documents, where the money went. The next slide will show how the dollars are distributed. I have two colors here, a blue and a yellow. The blue is actually the OTIA bonded monies. The yellow are those dollars that were leveraged, private, local contributions that added on to the $500 million. So for all intents and purposes, the OTIA is a $644.5 million investment in the state's infrastructure. Moving on to specifically the ODOT regions, you can see how things were split with regard to the distribution and the leverage dollars that came within. Our Region 1 is the Portland metropolitan area. Region 2 is the Mid-Willamette Valley that stretches from Lane County, then goes to the coast all the way up to Astoria. Region 3 is Southwest Oregon from Douglas County into Coos, Curry, Jackson, and Josephine. Region 4 from the Dalles to Lakeview, just that strip right in the middle of the state. And Region 5 are Eastern Oregon district. Again, 172 projects. We have the chart up there. I know it's tough to see, but what you would see are the bridges are indicated by the blue circles or blue triangles. The blue circles being the OTIA 1, the triangles being OTIA 2. That's consistent through the pavement preservation and modernization. The colors change. Preservation projects are orange, and the modernization projects are circles. Again, represented on that chart there, 172 projects distributed throughout the state of Oregon. We get to the bonding. How are we expending the dollars? That's the bottom line. Are we executing? You folks stepped up, delivered a package. It is now our obligation to step up and execute this package, and I believe we're doing that. In May of 2002, we sold bonds producing proceeds of $225 million. As it stands right now, the trajectory shows us spending or expending $30 million by the end of calendar year 2002. We expect an additional $100 million to be expended by the end of 2003, bringing that total to $130 million. With bonding, there are time parameters placed on that. There are IRS obligations that when you bond money, you have 5 years to deliver those projects. Our trajectory shows we will indeed meet that 5-year timeline. So we're tracking very well on the expenditures of that first issuance. We are now looking at the second issuance. Our chief financial officers and our financial folks are looking at the various projects out there. And we have tentatively placed a hold on the June 23rd issuance calendar for our next bond of OTIA-type monies. We are looking at anywhere between $100 million, but no more than $175 million. And the reason I'll tell you that is, once again, the combination of those projects that are ready to go will dictate the amount. But there is in law written that we can't breach the $400 million level. That means we cannot add any new projects. So we will stay below the $400 million level, which will allow some flexibility to make sure projects are evolving and being delivered, but it will also allow us to bring projects in from that universal list of OTIA projects should one fall by the wayside. So we're just playing a numbers game, but making sure that we stay within the parameters set by law. With that, expenditures going well. We are meeting all the timelines. I want to show you some of the projects. We have six projects that are done, completed. And very quickly, they range from bridge projects in Seaside, Oregon, to modernization projects in Hood River County. We have, a very aggressive delivery pattern by not only the state, but by local government. These are represented here. Just quickly, we just look at a couple pictures of the types of projects. I highlight the Seaside Bridge here, the Broadway Bridge in Seaside, I should say, as a bridge that had OTIA funding to the tune of about $853,000. What's important here is the city of Seaside actually brought forth $500,000 to leverage this project. That refers back to the $144.5 million of additional monies. Yes, sir.
Matthew, this is a city street then as opposed to a state highway?
This is a local bridge, yes, sir. That's correct. I will say that when you look at the projects of OTIA, roughly, I think it's 34%, or about $170 million went to local jurisdictions, their type projects, their bridge projects, the pavement preservation projects, as well as some modernization projects. So about 34% of the OTIA dollars flowed to the various categories and went to the local jurisdiction applicant. Another project up down in Douglas County was just an overlay job. You can see we cleaned things up. There were some safety elements with regard to guardrail. We widened some things, and we laid down some new asphalt. About $1 million project. Just a quick hit, show you some snapshots that these things are being completed. Now, I want to look forward and speak to the issues of what's coming next, what's coming online, what are the timelines for us to deliver these projects. If you look at the next slide, which the OTIA projects by year of completion, you can see in 2002 we had six projects completed. As we forecast out through the life of the bill, through about 2010, you can see when we think projects will become completed. We have some projects in the out years. 2009, 2010 are indeed the out years. We have major projects. Those are interchanges, big type projects that have just taken us time to gear up, to develop, do the preliminary engineering as well as the right-of-way purchase, and then get into construction. So one of the challenges of OTIA, and I think it's represented here, is during the tenor of the conversation in the 2001 legislative session, the legislators wanted new projects that we couldn't get to with the amounts of monies that we had already. Take care of the STIP, deliver your STIP. That's extremely important. You have somewhere between $300 million of projects ongoing there. Don't advance that work. Those projects have worked their way through the system. They have been developed, so to speak. Go out and find new projects that are somewhat on the shelf. It was a little misleading because we didn't have a shelf, to be very honest with you. We had throttled back on our development program. We had direction from the last gubernatorial administration that since we weren't receiving investment, and remember, OTIA was the first state investment in transportation in about a decade. Governor Kitzhaber said, throttle back. Put your monies on the system itself. Don't start planning and developing for projects that you have no money for. So there was a throttling back on developing things. What that meant is we didn't have a shelf of projects that had been developed. So what we have done, trying to meet the intent of the legislature to find new projects, was go out and talk to our acts, and I'll get to this a little later, vet those projects, let those those vital projects that the acts thought were important to their area, as well as the state, let those bubble up, and then start working on that. What that has done is there's a little lag in engagement in the amounts of money being spent. Initially, you have preliminary engineering and right-of-way dollars that don't expend a lot of money. About 15% of a project cost is captured in those two categories. It's where we get into construction that you see the spike of dollar expenditure, and that will be the next spike. But this gives you, again, just by number of the projects, the years that we see these things coming to fruition.
Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. The ones you have out in 08 through 10, are they still looking for additional funding on these projects, or it's all included in this?
Yeah. Chairman Brown, Representative Beyer, we have the funding for that. It's just developing and getting the project ready. If we look by expenditure, this gets to the dollars expended by year. It just represents the dollar amounts associated with delivering these projects. And you can see there'll be expenditures greatly increase when we get to the years 2003, 4, and 5. That's when those projects, the major construction, start to take off on the issuance of bonds and we start delivering these projects. I want to speak now to what I think is the success of OTIA. I've shared this in some ways, but this is an evolution. We keep learning as an agency. As I mentioned earlier, there are a handful of areas that we are realizing benefit. One, just being the vision and leadership that that the legislator and the governor provided by investing in transportation infrastructure with OTIA. That's our first win or success, I would think. Again, that was a 10-year drought of state investment, so that helped considerably. And I would argue that the investment is yielding dividends. The dividends known as projects. Again, if we go back or could go back to the 172 projects on our map, those are the dividends that will be reaped by the investment. We will deliver those, and we have now seen the first six with 10 coming in by the end of this calendar year. The final thing, and I think the most important thing, is the way this agency is doing business. We have changed. And we are looking to change the way we're doing business. Now, that not only impacts us, it impacts our local government partners. It impacts the consulting and contracting communities because they are adjusting. They are being just as aggressive as we're trying to be. We are seeing business done differently at ODOT in a couple different manners, and I'll go to the next slide and tell you. First, again, let me touch on a success of just delivering this package. It was the early collaboration between local government and ODOT at their policy group, the Local Official Advisory Committee. That was the group, for all intents and purposes, who helped craft the additional criteria for projects to be vetted. The forum, the engagement, the laboratory that we used to vet these projects was the Area Commissions on Transportation. There was a maturation process that took place. These folks had been challenged in dealing with STIP conversations. With OTIA, they became very aggressive in vetting the projects throughout the regions and bubbling things up. That was a comprehensive, it was an aggressive, and it was a transparent conversation that took place at these Area Commissions on Transportation. The stakeholders, I include the vast breadth and depth of folks who engage in transportation interests. Those folks were at those Area Commissions on Transportation at the table, again, helping vet these projects, making sure that we promoted the best projects that could come to our commission so we could move these projects, gavel down, and start turning dirt. The cities and counties, again, playing a significant role with regard to OT and forget about the amounts of money going to cities and counties. I'm talking about the delivery of the projects. Local government has stepped up and will account for over 40% of the projects being delivered. They are taking these on. We knew it was a challenge at ODOT when we received additional funds to the extent that as an agency we have the capacity to deliver about $300 million worth of projects, maybe $350. That's our skip numbers. It bounces back and forth. But that's the capacity of the agency to deliver transportation projects. With the wave of OTIA dollars coming on board, we knew we had to change the way we did business. Internally, we did some redeployment, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But we also knew we had to take advantage of the expertise we had at local government, as well as the expertise of the good folks in the consulting and contracting communities. Those folks are stepping up And while local government, I think, is carrying the majority, 40, at least over 40% of the delivery of the projects, the consultant community is actually delivering something like 30% as well, ODOT another 30. So we have triaged those OTIA projects to get them out so we can deliver. Still maintaining the delivery of our STIP projects. Now we have OTIA, and we are delivering those as well. We've just added some capacity with regard to our partners, be it local government and the contractors and consultants. I would also say, again, I want to give kudos to the folks at ODOT. I think they have stepped up, and they have delivered. They understand the importance of OTIA, not only just because it's the first statewide investment in the last 10 years, but they see it as a foundation or a jump-off point for continued conversation with regard to infrastructure investment. Knowing you can execute this, build some confidence that ODOT is a good investment. I think that's, to date, that is exactly where we are. ODOT is a good investment. We are delivering on the OTIA. When I speak to ODOT, I've touched on we're doing business differently. I want to highlight very quickly one aspect that has helped us move these projects. It's innovative contracting, the way we do business. We have now created a unit within ODOT, the Alternative Delivery Unit, where we redeployed folks within, created this unit. Those folks actually handle and oversee the activities of that consultant community who are delivering the project. So rather than taking on a project within ODOT and having a project manager within ODOT oversee and supervise the activities of ODOT personnel, we now have this alternative delivery unit for all intents and purposes that is a consultant project manager. They coordinate. They make sure everything's done with the consultant. It's a little bit hands-off. We have faith that the good folks from that industry can deliver these projects just as well as the good folks at ODOT. We just have to have that oversight. But again, that's expanded the capacity and the ability for this agency to do more. We have also used innovative contracting tools such as design build. We are seeing great success, and I'll touch a little bit later on some of the success we're realizing on some bridges where we've used the design build technique, and that's where we integrate the design and the designing and the building or the construction together into one unit rather than a sequential effort where we would design and then I would hand it off to Benegas Construction. We now get together and we work together. That allows us to deliver projects faster, and what we're realizing, it allows us to deliver projects cheaper. At least those are the successes of two bridges out on I-84 and then one down on I-5. Using, rather than the pay-as-you-go, we're using other contracting initiatives such as A plus B, where we have the low bid plus time. We combine those, and that gives us the greatest yield. An example of this is the I-5 217 at Cruz Way. That was an A plus B contracting. We will use that type of contracting on OTIA projects. We realized not so much a dollar savings.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Greenwood.
Could you explain that A plus B just a little bit?
Yes, sir.
The 217.
Yes, absolutely. Chairman Brown, Representative Greenlech, what the I-5-217 project offered was about a $40 million project. We knew that, and normally the process would be low bid. We would go out, throw this thing on the table, and whoever came in lowest would get it. What we saw here, because of the significance of the project itself and the 150,000 people that drive that area daily, we knew if we could compress the time it took us to deliver that project, the user cost, the impact on commerce, as well as just people traveling up and down I-5 and then on to 217, would be greatly enhanced. So thus, there's a savings just in timing, people's time. So we threw out the A portion. Here's what we think is the cost. You come in and bid on that. And then you tell us how long it takes to deliver that project. I will tell you the timelines were considerable. At one end, there was a bid that came in about 943 days. At the low end was about 475 days. So all the numbers, the prices, or the costs were about $40 million within that range. But you can see the wide range of time. What we chose, I think it was Peter Kiewit and Associates. They came in with the low bid as well as the greatest time. So literally we saved almost a year in time. Which we think is a significant savings to the general public. Does that help with the I-5-217?
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
Were there incentives then for being less than the 475 or penalties for being more than the 475?
Yes, sir. Thank you for prompting me. It's excellent. You know this. Bottom line, we looked at the amount of volume driving up and down the day, and we did put, I believe it was $100,000 a day incentive. For every day you completed, there would be $100,000 savings. But then again, the sword cut the other way. Every day you came in over your timeline, it would be $100,000 to the state of Oregon. There was Peter Kiewit delivered. I might not get the days right, but I think 40 some days ahead of the schedule that they thought, and there was a substantial incentive that went to the company. Now, we think that was a good investment because, again, that was 40 days. The traffic wasn't tied up on what I think is certainly a trade corridor that carries 25% of all the import and exports across the nation at one time. We freed that up an additional 43 days by that what we thought was good work by Peter Kiewit.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Thank you. I have a question regarding the timing of your environmental reviews and permitting. Are you including that in the design component, or are you considering that as a separate component when you're timing these? And then are you doing that in-house or mostly contracting that out?
Chairman Brown, Representative Dingfelter, it's all part of a project. That's the readying of the project. I think we're doing it in-house. We may be consulting some out, but I think that's just part of our readying a project. So it's included in the time frames allotted here. I will tell you that one of the advantages and one of the disciplines that was instilled during the ACT, the Area Commission on Transportation conversation, was looking at those projects that didn't have environmental hurdles, too many to overcome. We tried to look for clean projects that had made their way through a certain portion, or it looked like we weren't going to get into an endangered species or in water work type issue that could create problems that would slow it down, so we couldn't deliver it within the time frames of the bill. So we were somewhat selective in putting filters on it, making sure there weren't those encumbrances, but all that's included. And like I said, we think we forwarded from the acts to the commission clean projects for all intents and purposes.
Thank you.
I touched on early the design build, and we're going to see some photos of some projects a little bit later. But I said what we're realizing now are savings in time and in dollars. And this innovative contracting approach, at least on the lower Perry bridges, they're bridges out in eastern Oregon in between LeGrand and Pendleton. As of right now, the time saved is about a year. The contractor is a year ahead of schedule. And the cost savings today is about $1.5 million. So you've seen there's significant savings that we're realizing. This is a new area. We had just placed our toe in the design build area before with a handful, less than a handful of projects. But this is the first time that we're being aggressive. I think that the contracting community is delivering on this thing, and we're realizing successes. We see similar success on the Coast Fork Bridge crossing the Willamette. Again, about a year ahead of schedule with at least to date about a $1.5 million in cost savings. So we are working very hard. We are seeing success, and that's a good thing. Another collateral benefit. And as an agency, we took it upon ourselves, and that's just bottom line. It's about accountability. If indeed we are to execute, we need to share that, and we need to continue the transparent conversation that we've had regarding this package. We've come up with a green, yellow, red, which shows the status of these projects, and it's just bottom line. It's the schedule of the project. Just what's the project timeline? If you say it's going to be built by 2003, are you on time? If you are, you get a green. If you're missing it by about 89 days, we've broken it up into quarters. If you're within between 1 and 89 days beyond your time, we'll give you a yellow. If you breach that 90-day period, you're red. The same with project with budgeting. We are now just talking percentages. If you're on budget, you're green. If you're within 10%, and these are normal, these aren't anomalies. This is just the evolution of a project. But if you're within 10% of the original project budget, then you're at yellow. If you breach that, you're at 10. And then finally, the scope. This is just the description of the project. What are you going to build? Are you staying within those guidelines as well? Those descriptions aren't changing. this is an accountability piece. We have area managers throughout the state of Oregon. We have 13 of them. They oversee the construction of these projects as well as the construction of our STIP projects. This is extremely important to them because they do not want their name associated with projects that are red. Now, some of these things are inevitable, but the bottom line is these folks are working very hard to make sure everything migrates to green or yellow. That's a management tool. This is something that we've come on board. Our folks are taking very seriously, and when this report comes out, it's a monthly report, and I'll be very honest with you, this is the first time we've actually shared this in public because we've been tooling this thing, making sure we're syncing up all our numbers before we broadcast this information. But it's extremely important to those area managers because it's their name on the line as well as the agency's name on the line. And it's our commission who will call them in and say, why is Project X red? It's been red for 3 months. We get these documents. Can you tell us? They don't want to be placed in front of that panel. They want to work very hard to make sure these projects are delivered. If you go to the next slide, you will see kind of a snapshot of where we are with regard to our regions. We are, I think, of the projects, you can see the majority are green. Obviously, I think the eye does go to red. There is a something that jumps out at me, at least, two things with regard to this document. One is Region 4. Why are there seven red documents in region or projects in the region? Bottom line is we've had some information that was wrong. Now, rather than just saying, oh, that was a mistake, we can carry it, they placed information that was bad that blew a budget. They put in the wrong numbers, bottom line is what it was, on three of these projects. That blew the numbers. That turned the budget number red, which turned the project red. We will change that. We also have some PE, three additional things, where the PE cost of projects had gone over the 10% line. That turned the project red as well. We are triaging this. We think the first thing is just an informational, technical error. Chairman Brown.
Could you explain what PE means?
I apologize. Preliminary engineering, it's the design. It's working before you get to construction, readying the process with designing the project itself. So I apologize.
So, Mr. Chair, so the engineers screwed up, or who? How did that?
When we go out and we looked at projects, you look at a project, you think it's going to cost this much. Until you start working on the project itself, or open the patient up, so to speak, you never know. And I think there may have been some numbers that just didn't work. Like I say, I think that at least half of the projects in Region 4 was just they just wrote down numbers wrong. They charged to the wrong amount, so to speak, and that blew the budget. Being consistent, trying to be transparent, we didn't think it was just a technical correction. We will correct that we will show that project is red until all the numbers jive out, and that's what our area managers are working with our financial peoples to make sure the numbers jive. Now, specific to the scope, did we screw up on a number because we now think rather than $10,000 for preliminary engineering, it'll cost us $15 or $20. Is that a screw-up? It's a mistake. It certainly is. We're going in it, like, once again, and until you open that patient up, you're prone to those type of things, and we'll adjust that. Again, there was no TIA commitment, save $1 million for a project. They are staying within that $1 million commitment. They're just going back to a project and a preliminary engineering number that seems to have gotten out of hand. We're monitoring those things. We'll try to bring it back in to the timeline. Excuse me, into the cost of the project. So, to answer you, was it a screw up? Yeah, screw up, mistake, whatever term you want to use on it. But it's a correctable mistake that we'll work with. But bottom line, they have X number of dollars to deliver that project, and they will work to do that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Because the percentage seems extremely high in Region 4. 17 projects, and they messed up on seven. Were the same group of people involved in all the 17, the same engineers or same people that made that error? Does that seem high to you?
It's a little high, yeah.
42 projects in Region 2 and only one in the red seems really extraordinary to me.
Chairman Brown, Representative Zahner, I think certainly we're having conversations with those folks. Again, I think the majority can be made whole just by a technical correction, making sure we insert the right numbers in there. The second thing is we are making sure that they're held accountable. That's the intent of this document right now. So if indeed they aren't cleared and folks are turning the heat on these folks, because we don't want to bring back status reports that grow any more red projects. We want to migrate toward the green and the yellow because those are much more manageable. We know we have a problem. Those issues are being triaged. And I think the next time we report back to you and bring this, I don't think you'll see the problems that exist right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Matt.
I want to speak to the, as we move on now, Mr. Chair, I want to speak to the issues in front of us, those projects, and I thought I could just capture these visually, just to show you the type of projects that we are engaged in that will come forward, just to show again that they are spread across the state of Oregon. Some quick snapshots of a local agency model modernization project for the city of Portland up on Foster Boulevard and 162nd. This improves an intersection. Signalize it. There's some safety elements again. This is just a much better, safer project because of the OTN investment. If we go out to Washington County, this was a Farmington Road. This is about halfway done. Again, a rural investment. Widened the shoulders, fixed up the pavement, as well as made some safety improvements at three intersections out in rural Washington County.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenway.
That probably should read the Southwest 219, not the Highway 219.
Thank you. Go to the next one. Out down in Douglas County, Ford's Bridge on I-5. We are replacing a bridge with cracks in it. And if you look very closely, you can see some of the new construction right to the right of the existing bridge. We move to one of the bridges where we use design build, the Lower Perry Bridge. Again, this is a bridge that's a year ahead of schedule with a $1.5 million savings to date, eastbound, westbound. We move again to Washington County. This is a local bridge. The Mentor Bridge there actually was, I think, a groundbreaking for this just last Friday. So we are moving, replacing just an old, obsolete bridge, a timber bridge, with a new concrete bridge. Move out to Morrow County. This is, again, an effort to widen the road, Highway 320, as well as replace some obsolete bridges. Deschutes County, we have a bridge project out there. Again, old timber bridge, bringing it up to standards, a new concrete structure. City of Prineville, this is the first phase of the Prineville truck route. And trying, again, to move trucks out of the community. Mr. Chairman, that's kind of coming attraction, so to speak, and as we continue to bring forth status reports on OTIA, those will move to the construction completed categories, and there'll be a new batch that we can share with you. I want to end with this web page, because this is comprehensive. This will allow anyone in the state of Oregon to click on this web page and get a detailed history of the project from its inception to its completion. It will, if you just know the name of the project or you know what part of the state you live in, this is a fairly user-friendly web page that you can click on these projects, and you will just go through a history. You can actually have pictures of the projects from what it looks like now to when it's complete, so you can see the evolution of the project. Again, this is in keeping, we think, with the transparency that this effort has yielded, that the public knows they've invested money. These are the dividends that are being returned to the public, and we want to make sure they understand how their money is being used. This web page, which if it's not up today, the launch of this is imminent. I think this allows anyone that needs any questions answered with regard to OTIA. Obviously, if you can't find what you need, we've got a contact person, our area manager, again, who is a contact person out in the region, they're more than happy to walk through with anyone the status of individual projects. Mr. Chairman, with that, I am done, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
Matthew, the regular STIP construction program, is it going along on schedule? The OTIA funding on top of that there, didn't throw those projects behind. So everything is moving this at the same pace it would have anyway.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is correct. There is a natural flow to the STIP. We are delivering, I think, anywhere between about 90% of the STIP projects. There's always a slippage due to unforeseen type issues. I will tell you, when OTIA passed, there was a little hitch in the get-along at ODOT, to be very honest with you, because there was a new wave of money. We were at capacity. We are an agency that can deliver, again, anywhere between $250 and $300 million. We're equipped to do that. We ask for no additional FTE with OTIA. Director Warner was very specific that we will deliver this with folks. What that prompted us to do was to look at the organization, redeploy folks, ready the agency for this new wave of OTIA dollars. We are delivering our STIP, and I think, as the presentation shows, we are delivering the OTIA projects as well.
Do you have any economic figures on just what type of job creation these additional OTIA dollars means to the state, especially this time when we've got so many high unemployment problems?
Mr. Chairman, we know this. In highway infrastructure construction, about $1 million investment yields to sustaining about 19 family wage jobs. If you do the math, and I've done the math, I think we're at least sustaining 1,000 jobs in the state of Oregon. I think that turns out somewhere to the tune of about $25 million in income tax. So this investment is pumping dollars into the economy, and the multiplier effect is taking place. So while I think there was a lot of talk about economic stimulus, specifically in the first special session, the types of projects that we developed didn't immediately stimulate the economy, but there was activity. And once we're cranked up and we are moving right now, we are seeing significant investment in the economy. And I think we're creating or sustaining about 1,000 jobs as well. That's what the numbers seem to bear out.
Thank you, Matthew. Any other questions? Representative Dingell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being an optimist, hopefully we'll see another OTIA package coming out of the session. If we are able to have some additional funding, is that going to piggyback on? I mean, will you be issuing those bonds soon, or will you have to wait until the OTIA-1 projects are complete before you can kick in on those, or will you be hiring additional staff to take on those new projects?
Chairman Brown, Representative Dingfelder, I may bring Dave Tyler, if I could. He's our CFO. He's our bonding smart guy to answer part of the question. If I could ask David to come up, if you're comfortable with that, I think he can ask the specifics about the timing of bond issuance. What I will say is, for all intents and purposes, the OTIA package was a capital package.
Mm-hmm.
And while that did triage some of the bridge issues we have, I think you're aware that we do have bridge issues. Should there be a next wave of investment, I think bridges, as well as something that OTIA didn't address, while it did send $170 million to local government, it didn't address the maintenance of the system. And I think we have to prepare. That's where we need to go if there is indeed an opportunity to chase and capture the next wave of investment with regard to transportation. Now, with regard to the issuance and the timing, I'll defer to Mr. Tyler.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Tyler, Chief Financial Officer for ODOT. It's a very good question. What we look at in terms of planning for the issuance of bonds is the pace at which projects will come online and be ready to be delivered. So as the OTIA-1 projects mature, we'll be seeing additional series of issues similar to OTIA-2, and if there's a bridge package, we'll be issuing bonds for those at the same time based on project readiness. So we could be doing multiple issues over the course of a 6- or a 12-month period based on how the projects appear to be developing.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Greenway.
I'll be as optimistic as Representative Dingfelder and hope with her that we have an OTIA-3. If we do, how will the specific projects be defined? There's a very interesting range of projects across the regions, and perhaps you talk about how OTIA-2 came about, but specifically, how would they come about in OTIA-3?
Chairman Brown, Representative Green, like it seems to me, not no, I mean, trying to be optimistic and saying this is where ODOT sees it issues specifically to bridges, and we have the bridge options report, which identifies a $4.7 billion issue with bridges. And within that, a $1.7 billion effort to triage those bridges to the ones that will allow commerce to move throughout the state. If we can capture $1.7 billion, we allow freight and commerce to move throughout the state because we've secured an east-west and a north-south route. Obviously, we have those. If from a bridge perspective, we have those bridges. We know what is needed to secure those routes in the various and sundry connections to the freight routes within the state of Oregon. So I think we have a good picture of our bridge needs specific to that. When you get to the maintenance of the system, I think local government is working very hard. I think we know we've worked together and we've identified about a $500 million annual shortage and just meeting the basic maintenance needs of our system. That's state, county, and cities. In my conversations with cities and counties, they have helped articulate and identify where that maintenance and operation type or preservation type money would go. So while I don't have a good handle, I can't tell you, I can give you a list. It's my understanding local government is preparing that. So when indeed the option arises, and I'm trying to be very optimistic as well, I think we'll be able to show you not only where we can throw bridge money, but where we can throw maintenance and preservation money as well.
Can I follow up, sir?
Follow up.
Yeah, no, I understand that universe, and the universe is enormous with $4 billion in bridges and a half a billion a year in roads. The question is, you know, folks in my district are going to be saying, well, will that money be for 217? Or, I mean, how specifically inside that, what's the process by which the, I don't know, $400, $500 million might be picked? Kind of the assumption we're not going to get $5 billion in this.
Sure. Well, Chairman Brown, Representative Green, like, again, I think that work has been done. It's specific for bridges within our bridge options report, where they have taken those bridges. They've looked at the sufficiencies or the deficiencies, more so to speak, the cracks that are making these bridges vulnerable, and they have taken those and articulated down where we're most vulnerable. Again, we're trying to secure that east-west and north-south route that allows commerce. That's our first thrust to address the issue. And within that document, they've been able to identify each and every bridge and the segments within that need to be dealt with. So they'll literally, there is a list. I mean, I'm not sure if there's any up in your area. But if it looks like just trying to secure a route from I-5 to Astoria, a freight route, trying to make sure that those areas are covered. We'll have those specific bridges articulated in the package. Again, the thrust is trying to secure routes that allow commerce to continue to move throughout the state of Oregon. I don't know if I'm answering your question, sir. I'm a little concerned that I'm not. I can follow up. I will follow up with you, try it with our folks to see. What I don't want left is the impression that it's a black box. In identifying these bridges. There has been a lot of work done, and I think we can identify the specific bridges within this report that I think addresses your question.
In the OTIA process, I know that the local acts played a large part in identifying these projects and prioritizing these projects and then making their recommendation to the Highway Commission. There.
That is what I was looking for.
Some of that. Chairman Brown, I think that's an excellent point, and they did a great job with regard to modernization and pavement preservation projects. With regard to the bridges, what they chose to do was defer back to the engineers, saying, we know you have an inventory, you have a process that identifies bridges with regard to their deficiencies, so the worst bridge first, so to speak. And they threw it back to the bridge engineers themselves to identify the bridge project specific to OTIA. They did review it, and with there was one question that came back with regard to a bridge down in Douglas County that they thought, looking at all the criteria, the Southwest Act at the time had indicated, switch the two bridges. We think the one bridge is more important than the one you have listed. Upon review, that's exactly what our engineers did. So.
Any other questions? Representative Zahner, you look like you're ready to.
Yeah, I do. On page 8 here, where you have $130 million you expect to spend by the end of this year, and then $225 million by 2007. Is that money there now? And are we just? It seems we have identified the bridges we need to repair. And if we got this extra money laying around, why don't we start it right away? Why 207? That I'm having some problems with that.
This is a guy that Mr. Tyler will answer that question. It's just about readying the bond, the next bond, the issuance of bonds. So he'll tell you why we're holding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, as we look at the prospects and hopefully the fruition of a new bridge package, what we have tried to do is we looked at the OTIA money and the legislation under both House Bill 2142 and House Bill 4010 through the special session. They were both very clear. We had a specific list of projects. We're not able at this point in time to go outside of that list of projects to place these bond proceeds on any other projects that could come forward other than through the OTIA 2 program, which was the additional $100 million approved in the special session. So we have the list, and the way the legislation was crafted, we're not able to go outside of that list for the OTIA program.
We've got a cap on it, huh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, that's correct.
Representative Mabry.
On the pages following, the slide there is the individual projects. And I'm just looking at one. It's not necessary that you necessarily look at it, but my eyes immediately went to Region 4, which is the area that I work in. And you have Crooked River Ranch Highway Preservation, $90,000 original delivery year 2002, and then later on it's revised 2002, and you've got the same project listed at $1.595 million. Revised delivery year 2003. My question is, I was down at Crooked River Ranch a couple of times during the election. They had done quite a lot of paving. Mm-hmm. So my question is, I guess, twofold. Is that $90,000 here already done, and the remainder of $195,000 to be done in 2003?
Chairman Brown, Representative Mabry, the project was phased, so there was an investment. There's an additional investment coming in.
Okay. And
follow up.
Is that revision one of the it was just phased, it wasn't one of the red projects that was?
No, sir.
Okay, so there's no correlation there.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Chairman Brown, if I may, before we wrap up here, we've also given you a document, again, for clarity and transparency, this document right here. It should be at the very end. What this document indicates is when projects will go to bid. And if you look at the front page, you'll see we have a handful of projects. These are broken down by our regions and the types of projects. But the original launch date was 2002. And you'll see the first page looks pretty good. We're on track. You go to the second page, and you'll see the fourth project down. That's a project that has moved. That has evolved. As we got into the project, originally we thought we could go to bid in 2002. Obviously, there's something specific to that project that has slipped it back to 2004. Again, this is normal. This is part of the evolution of delivering projects. Go down a little bit further to the Drake Creek project, a preservation project, and you'll see that we originally scheduled that to launch in 2003. Again, upon review, we found that we could accelerate that, and we will launch this year. This is the ebb and flow of project development. Again, we will keep it within the timelines of the bill. I just want you to know that this is the transparency. This is what we will bring to you to show when projects are to launch, and if they haven't launched, we will articulate the reason why. We have background materials as to why a project will be delayed or why a project will be advanced. This is a summary of the launch dates and the tracking of those. We can always go back to the 172 projects and show the evolution of delivery, the timelines and such. Again, we want to be comprehensive, but more importantly, we want to be transparent.
Thank you. Thank you, folks, very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
Presentation this morning. Janet, do you have anything on our agenda for next Wednesday and Friday?
No, Mr. Chair, the agendas are out. We have a regular 8:30 meeting Wednesday and Friday with bills on one bill on Wednesday and another overview, and then four bills on Friday.
Thank you. Representative,
Chair, I want to thank the committee and apologize for the rain you had to stand out in when we were looking at that piece of concrete the other day, but I appreciate your efforts, and I'll try to avoid that next time. I'll have sunshine if we have a problem out there.
Thank you, Representative. We're all Oregonians. We're used to that rain. So, you know.
Did it rain that day, Cliff?
I'll pan on a flat rock. It
did. Representative Byer.
Just a question about Friday. Are we not doing 8:30 floor session?
Oh, I'm sorry. Friday will be 9 o'clock.
You know when the floor session is? Yeah.
We've been told by the chief clerk's office that until further notice, Friday floor sessions will be short and they'll be at 8:30.
Yep.
And if they aren't short, you just come after the floor session when that's when we'll start.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.